So in our next session, we want to talk about the church. Like, how do we change the corporate culture of the church? And we'll define all what that means. But we've talked a lot about already that, you know, that we're trying to make this the DNA of a church, right? But there's a corporate culture that exists. So quick question, how many churches have you visited recently? Do people visit churches anymore? Yeah. Couple.
Not when you're a pastor, you can't. I'm stuck with one church.
Yeah. Well, we were down in Tampa and a couple months ago, and you know, there's a temptation just to, you know, switch our stuff online, you know, watch our service online, sit in bed, you know. But we went to a church, Grace Bible Church of Tampa. Yeah, Grace Bible Church of Tampa. It was good. I mean, we enjoyed it. Good teaching, you know, neat ministries they had. But we don't typically visit many churches, do we? I've never had to look for a home church. Like, I've never had to. I don't know what that's like. I got saved in a church, and then ended up going on staff at that church, and then that church planted the church I'm at now, and I came down here. So I've never. I don't know what it looks like to. Church shop. I love going to other churches, you know. But we don't typically visit a bunch of churches unless we're shopping. But if you did, this is what you would discover. Churches are like people. Each one has its own personality. They're all different to some level. And again, it's not an organization, right? It's an organism. It should be that way. But there's a corporate culture to it. And so what's the corporate culture? Well, by definition, we could say that it's a blend of the values, beliefs, taboos, symbols, rituals, and myths that all organizations develop over time. Okay. All of that is part of our, that makes up our corporate culture. Right now, we're a church that meets in the gym of a YMCA. Okay. Some people won't come to our church because we meet in the gym at a YMCA. Other people come to our church because they're getting ready to go work out and they realize it's closed and they say, well, I'll go to a church that meets in the gym at a YMCA. But what is the corporate culture? It's the term describes and governs the way an organization's leaders and employees, and it says employees slash members, right? Employees would be an organization, members would be a church. But how they think and they feel and they act. It includes the way that the organization conducts its business or ministry. So you've got a culture within a church. It also treats its employees, its customers, and the wider community. You know, one of the reasons that a church is tax exempt is because it's supposed to be doing so much good in the community that there's no need to pay taxes for it. Enough said. All right. So corporate culture includes the way the organization allows, even encourages freedom in decision-making within assigned roles. Okay? So there's some churches that, I mean, if you think about it, there's some churches that are congregationally led churches, right? Congregation makes all the decisions for the church. Boy, that can be difficult, you know? Because you could have a sinning member who does not come to anything that gets the same equal vote as the guy who is walking with the Lord on a daily basis. Okay, but the corporate culture is kind of determined in who makes decisions. It also allows or even encourages creativity in developing new ideas and programs. So when this pastor is wanting to talk about small groups, he's being creative, right? He's given that authority to do that. Or I shouldn't say pastor, the elder, I guess same thing. But you've seen, you know, somebody comes to the church and at our church we used to do it like this. And, you know, some churches say, well, you're not in your church anymore. Other churches say, well, you're a member. You do whatever you want. Okay? That's the corporate culture. It also structures its leadership and information flow through its hierarchy. How do you get to the people in charge? How do you get this message to somebody? You know, for years, kind of the idea that for the pastor is he was a bit untouchable. Right? He stood up on the stage and behind a pulpit, and to get any time with him would be like going and seeing the wizard. You know, it's really difficult to get to him. Whereas, and for me, honestly, that was a bit of what I saw modeled. And I remember going to Chuck Swindoll's church, Frisco Community Church. I can't remember the name now. Anyway, I was over there teaching and training some folks in some mission stuff, and I stayed over on a Sunday, and the missions pastor says, "Hey, do you want to meet Pastor Chuck Sunday morning?" I thought, "Does he have time?" And he said, "Oh yeah, this is what he does." And so he was actually in the front of the church. And so he walked in and walked right up and he introduced me and we talked for a few minutes. "Oh, you're from South Carolina?" And, you know, he made fun of me. And then he said, "Oh, have you met so-and-so?" And I hadn't met him yet. He said, "He's our pastor of whatever." He went to the Citadel, which was, you know, close to where I was at in South Carolina. Next thing I know, I'm talking to this guy. We had this great conversation. I look back and Swindoll's talking to somebody else. I thought, that's pretty impressive, you know? And then I think they did two or three services. I don't remember now. Their first Sunday, I think they had 10,000 people that came. So, but they did two or three services. And Tom, their missions pastor, and I, you know, we walked around. And I noticed that Pastor Chuck was still, he was walking the hallways after the last service. And I thought, what is that? And I said, "Tom, I've never seen that before." And he said, "Pastor Chuck's first person to get here, and he's the last person who leaves." He said, "He wants to make sure if anybody wants access to him, they have it." That was so good. And this is Swindoll. This isn't De Guzman, right? I mean, everybody wants access to him. But what a master of being able to make somebody feel really welcome and then pass them off. And I don't mean that in a negative way, right? But pass them off to somebody else who made them feel really welcome. You know. But understand there's structure in that. Like that's the church DNA. How do you get to your leadership? What's the flow of information look like from leader to member or from member to leader? That's your corporate culture. The only way to really understand a culture, though, you have to be immersed in it. You can't just tell people about it. And so it can be formal, a culture can be, right? And a written mission or value statement. What do you think our mission statement is at CBC? What were you going to say, Ryan? Oh, good. Okay. I didn't know what anybody would say. Yeah, make disciples and make disciples. All right. I don't know that we have that written anywhere.
It used to be in the bulletin for
years. Did we? Okay. Yeah. I think we had each one reach one in the bulletin for years. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. So it could be formal like that. Formal statements they answer important questions like why do you exist? It gives a vision statement, it gives what your goal is. We're gonna make disciples. Who make disciples? So there's an objective statement in there. It also asks or answers the question, "How will you achieve it?" in a mission statement. I don't know that we have that. You know, for years that was the big thing, right? If you're any kind of business or anything else, is you have to have a mission statement, a vision statement, and stuff. Yep, sure. Is it? Why do you exist? What is your goal? And then the next one is, how will you achieve it? A mission statement. And then the next one. You guys there? Are we good? Am I going to? What do you value? And so let me give an example of this through OIC. And I'm going to kind of breeze through this pretty quickly. But OIC has all of this already in place, and we don't as a church, so I thought it'd be good to work through their formal stuff. And I don't know if it's on your notes or not. Why does OIC exist? Well, to glorify God through the spiritual strengthening of believers in churches around the world. By the way, the term OIC is kind of a very Western term, isn't it? Overseas Instruction and Counseling. Well, what happens when Bangladesh becomes a counseling trainers as well? And we call them overseas. Where are they going to go? Well, we're hoping they just stay in Bangladesh, or in Bangladesh, in that area there. So it's kind of a funny name. I think if I were to do it, I'd call it Global Instruction and Counseling rather than overseas. A very Western term. Sorry. What is our objective statement? Well, to assist in the initial creation and continuing development of national biblical counseling training and certifying organizations. So if we were, I was in Honduras teaching a couple years ago, and there is no national organization, national certifying organization. We have ACBC. We have CEF. There's a couple others as well, ACBC being the largest. But Honduras has none. And so module 4 for them was, how do we help you to develop a national certifying organization? So you guys already have that, right? So that's why I say I can breeze through some of these things. How will we achieve that? Well, we train biblical counseling trainers around the world. That's what we do. Okay, we talked about that a few minutes ago. What do we value? Well, we value humility. We value love. We value orderliness. And that's why we have everything written down. We've got all. We're not just coming in and shooting off the hip and just saying, "Well, I'm just kind of, you know, this is what God's putting on my heart today to talk to you about." It's very structured. We want to be excellent in all that we do, and diligent and dependable, enthusiastic. And some of our guys, like, we need to work on that. Back more? Back or forward? Oh, I got you. Sorry about that. Yeah, as I talked about how orderly we are. Yeah, it wouldn't have been Joe's fault on that. But we can blame him because he's not here. So, yeah. Tell me when you're ready. What's that?
It was a test.
Yeah, good job. You passed. That was the last thing we had to do. All right, you got it? All right. So we've got a values statement. The next part of our value statement, number 3, mutual blessing through our partnerships. Oh, it's so cool to go to these other countries and see, you know, these guys as they're learning and growing. And, you know, I taught in Alaska a few years ago and stayed with this family. And when we left their home, they said, "Listen, anytime you guys want to come back, we would love to host you. If you just get here, we'll take care of everything else." And so COVID year happened, and they called, I think it was in May, and they said, "Listen, if you can get to Alaska, there's nobody in Alaska. You guys would love it here this summer. This is the best summer ever to go to Alaska." So we flew to Alaska and, you know, stayed at their home. It was awesome. It was so cheap, yeah. Nobody else was flying. It's kind of a pain, though. It was cheap, but it wasn't free with all the COVID requirements. So, note, there could be a significant disparity between what is written about the organization and what is experienced within the organization. Right, you can talk all you want about how loving your church is and not be loving. And so corporate culture, we talked about the formal side, but corporate culture is always informal as well. Okay, so what is spoken about and how it is spoken about, and or what is merely understood. And this actually, and not intentionally, but we will talk about the idea of organization, organism, right? In our corporate culture, we see this in the Bible, the organism side, in the tribes of the Old Testament. There was one nation, but they really varied in their cultures. Now, these different tribes were different, right? Very, very different. But what do you see in the church? Well, the same thing, right? In the church of the New Testament, you got one body, but you have varying cultures. Max, I would be willing to bet that your church, a Haitian church, looks a lot different than our church does. Yeah, yeah, definitely. Wouldn't it be fun, though, to combine our services together one Sunday? Josh, we ought to work on that. That would be a really fun thing to do, you know? Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, yeah. How many people does your building fit? Okay. Well, we've got about 250. So if you can cover the other 50. Now, we've got 350 chairs and set up on Sunday morning, so you can come over to us as well. So, but that would be fun, right? I mean, to come on. But you see that we're very different, you know? Well, 2 weeks from tomorrow, you know, we'll be worshiping in the South African church, you know, and it's so cool, you know, and I've got like a favorite song, and every year we sing it, and the whole congregation just looks at me when we sing the song, and, you know, and it's got all these clicks in it too because they have a language that clicks, you know, and so I won't sing it for you, but I mean they'll be dancing and everywhere, and I'm just like, wow, this is so fun, this is so cool, you know. And we're so different, you know. But we went to a Chinese church a number of years ago, and they were doing baptism that day. And I think they were baptizing like 350 people. It was like an assembly line. I mean, it just looked like a Chinese factory. It was just one after another. There was a certain spot you had to stand on when it was your turn, and then you walk from this spot to this spot to this spot to this spot, and you finally get there, and then you get into the baptismal, and there's two pastors. One's job is to hold your nose, and the other one's to hold up his hand. So you get the one, he holds your nose, you bring him down, and you come up, and there's two ladies standing right here, and they put right into these two ladies' hands, and then one puts a towel on your face, and the other, and they march you around. Hundreds. You know? Hundreds of people. It's like, wow, that's so fun, you know? But we don't do it. Like we did a baptism last week in a lake. You know, out in public, and you know, so it's different, right? And so it's one church, we're one body, but there's varying cultures even within our own city. Okay, and that's okay. Can organizations or churches have similar purposes in different cultures? Yes, no doubt about it. Okay, how can a church's corporate culture be changed? This is where we need to camp out at. How do we change that? How do we change the corporate culture? First of all, it has to be through leaders. The leaders have to recognize that the old ways, now listen, the old ways may have been inherited, okay? May have been expected, may have been imposed, but they have to recognize that the old ways are not producing God's glory-focused, grace-filled, humble, ministry-minded, well-trained, and winsome disciples of Christ. So if the culture is going to change, the pastor has to realize what we're doing isn't working. It's not working. What we're doing is not working. He has to come to that. And I say the leaders have to come to that decision, which is a very humbling thing to do. My buddy, Bill Fowler, they planted a community Bible church of Savannah, Georgia. And they had a black church downtown that had about five to eight people, I don't remember. They had a building that seated about 200 people. And so they had, Bill and them had 60 people in the church, 60, 70 people at the time. And this other church just said, listen, what we're doing isn't working. We're getting older, we're losing our people. And said, if you will commit to 5 years in being as staying as a church here, then we'll give you all of our property, buildings, everything else. And so they did. And now they're 1,500 people. They've got multiple properties around there. In Savannah. Yeah, Community Bible Church of Savannah. Yeah, fantastic church. So these leaders were humble enough to recognize what we're doing isn't working. Okay. And in our community, and here's what's sad, that John Holloway or Holloman, that used to be the head of the Marian Baptist Association, we need a building. And so we were talking about buildings with him, and him and I were really good friends. And he said, what happens when churches die? He said, well, as they're dying, he said, they usually call me and then they ask me, or he said, then I give them five options that they have. First option is you can borrow money from the association, call in a pastor, and see if the hill rent, if the church will grow then. You can, number two, you can bring somebody in who's bivocational and spend a little bit of money on him. I don't remember all of them, but the last one, number five, was, or you can keep doing what you do until the church just dies. And he said every single church that he spoke to chose option five. We're just going to die. There's no humility there. So if the corporate culture is going to be changed, it has to come from the leadership who humbly says, we don't have this all figured out. So let me ask you this. Are the old ways always bad ways? No, of course not. Right? Not always bad ways. So what are some examples of church's culture-bound areas of ministry or activities? This is for you guys to participate in. What are some examples of things that work culturally that we stay in, whether good or bad? Okay. The church that you've been involved with. So you said the songs we sing, types of songs we sing. Sure. What else? Yep, youth ministry. Youth ministry, by the way, is not biblical. Do you know that? Yeah. How we do communion. How we do baptism.
Use of technology like a screen.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of pastors using AI now to write their sermons. Did you know that? Yeah. I actually went on the other day and I went on that ChatGPT and I said, I forget what chapter it was.
It was Genesis 11?
Something. I was like, yeah, write me a sermon, a 45-minute sermon on Genesis 11 and to see what it would do. And it gave me like 3 minutes and 2 minutes of it was reading the passage. But it wasn't inaccurate what it said. But I thought, wow, but the pastors are doing that. They're getting their sermons from artificial intelligence. Crazy. So how can you change the culture? Well, the leader study the scriptures, identify the values and structural changes necessary to produce disciples. That's the goal, right? We want to make disciples. Ultimately, we want to make disciples who make disciples. I think it's J.D. Greer that says we want to make disciple-making disciples. I like that. And so they need to study church history. Okay. Teach. And then inform the church of each change. It's hard to change a church culture. Okay. Very difficult to do it. Especially if you're in a denomination. Even harder. So the leader also has to teach and talk about new cultural perspectives. Could be different groups of people have moved into the area that have a different culture. I love what First Baptist Church of Jacksonville is doing. I don't know if you've seen it or not. Have they been in First Baptist Jacks? Huge church, huge. They've got, a lot of downtown is their church. And, just massive organization. And I was there recently and they were saying that they're actually selling a lot of the property. I thought, oh, no, that's terrible. And they said, no, it's good. He said, and the reason we're selling is because they realize everybody that came to their church, literally thousands and thousands of people, drove to their church. And because there's not really houses there downtown. And they said, so they've actually made this emphasis on church planting into communities. And so they're taking their congregations and they're going to all over Jacksonville and planting churches. And because of that, they don't have a need for all these more buildings and parking garages and all these things. You know? Yeah. And in fact, my buddy Bill Fowler was saying, I don't remember the exact number, so don't quote me on this, but let's say they've got I think they've got seating for 1,200 and they're getting about 3,000 in their services, in between three services. And yes, they went to three services, and I said, dude, you need to plant a church. He said, we just did. And he said, we sent 100 people, I think, to Rankin, Georgia. We sent 100 people to Rankin, and 300 people joined our church right after that. there's different cultural perspectives, right? All kinds of different things going on. And so the leaders need to talk about those things and teach those things. They also need to enact necessary organizational and structural changes so that these things can take place. Sherry and I had an offer to go to South Africa a number of years ago to take over a ministry over there. And the guy who led it, that was leading the ministry, boy, he was, what's the right word? She can say a kinder word than I can. Just real direct, you know, opinionated. And I remember talking to one of his kids, you know, adult kids, and they said, Mike, why will you not go to South Africa, you know, full time? And I said, your dad has to die first. And he went, oh, yeah, I get it. Now, he knew exactly what I was talking about. But so sometimes to make a corporate change like this is some necessary organizational, could be staffing, right? Structural changes, maybe the way you do your service. Some of that needs to change if the culture is going to change, right? So that's a big deal, okay? The leaders also have to graciously and biblically respond to the expected reaction from those who invested in the old ways. For me, I don't think I'm ever the kind of guy that would do really well with, like, coming into a church that has 1,000 people and taking over as pastor. I think I'm too opinionated. For that. And so I'm more the kind that comes in, blows it all up, and let's start over. That's more my personality. So, So this will not be natural for me to do. All right. Sanctify them in truth. All right. Okay. You want to just keep going? I don't know that we'll get through. Well, we might. You want to stretch your legs for a few minutes or?